Hello, this is Paula Kaufman with the Herald and Review, dated Thursday, November 5th, 2020. We'll start with an article on the front page headlined, Election 2020, Biden Reclaiming Blue Wall, Trump Challenges, by Jonathan Lamar, Amar Madhani, Zeke Miller, Jill Colvin, and Alexandra Jaffe, Associated Press, Washington. Joe Biden won the battleground prizes of Michigan and Wisconsin on Wednesday, claiming a key part of the blue wall that slipped away from Democrats 4 years ago and dramatically narrowing President Donald Trump's pathway to re-election. A full day after Election Day, neither candidate had cleared the 270 Electoral College votes needed to win the White House. But Biden's victories in the Great Lakes states left him at 264, meaning he was one state away, any state, from crossing the threshold and becoming president-elect. Biden, who has received more than 71 million votes, the most in history, was joined by his running mate Kamala Harris at an afternoon news conference and said he now expected to win the presidency, though he stopped short of outright declaring victory. "I will govern as an American president," Biden said. "There will be no red states and blue states when we win, just the United States of America." It was a stark contrast to Trump, who early Wednesday morning falsely proclaimed that he had won the election, even though millions of votes remained uncounted and the race was far from over. The Associated Press called Wisconsin for Biden after election officials in the state said all outstanding ballots had been counted, save for a few hundred in one township and an expected small number of provisional votes. Trump's campaign requested a recount, in addition to filing lawsuits in Pennsylvania and Michigan. Statewide counts in Wisconsin have historically changed the vote tally by only a few hundred votes. Biden led by 0.624 percentage point out of nearly 3.3 million ballots counted. For 4 years, Democrats had been haunted by the crumbling of the blue wall, the trio of Great Lakes states, Pennsylvania is the third, that their candidates had been able to count on every 4 years. But Trump's populist appeal struck a chord with white working-class voters, and he captured all three in 2016 by a total of just 77,000 votes. Both candidates this year fiercely fought for the states, with Biden's everyman political persona resonating in blue-collar towns, while his campaign also pushed to increase turnout among black voters in cities like Detroit and Milwaukee. Pennsylvania remained too early to call Wednesday night. It was unclear when or how quickly a national winner could be determined after a long, bitter campaign dominated by the coronavirus and its effects on Americans and the national economy. But Biden's possible pathways to the White House were expanding rapidly. After the victories in Wisconsin and Michigan, he held 264 Electoral College votes, just six away from the presidency. A win in any state, including Nevada with its six votes, would be enough to end Trump's tenure in the White House. Trump spent much of Wednesday in the White House residence, huddling with advisors and fuming at media coverage, showing his Democratic rival picking up key battlegrounds. Trump falsely claimed victory in several key states and amplified unsubstantiated conspiracy theories about Democratic gains as absentee and early votes were tabulated. Trump campaign manager Bill Stepien said the president would formally request a Wisconsin recount, citing irregularities in several counties. And the campaign said it was filing suit in Michigan and Pennsylvania to halt ballot counting on grounds that it wasn't given proper access to observe. At the same time, hundreds of thousands of votes were still to be counted in Pennsylvania, and Trump's campaign said it was moving to intervene in the existing Supreme Court litigation over counting mail-in ballots there. Yet, the campaign also argued that it was the outstanding votes in Arizona that could reverse the outcome there, showcasing an inherent inconsistency with their arguments. In other closely watched races, Trump picked up Florida, the largest of the swing states, and held onto Texas and Ohio, while Biden kept New Hampshire and Minnesota and flipped Arizona, a state that had reliably voted Republican in recent elections. The unsettled nature of the presidential race was reflective of a somewhat disappointing night for the Democrats, who had hoped to deliver a thorough repudiation of Trump's 4 years in office, while also reclaiming the Senate, to have a firm grasp on all of Washington. But the GOP held on to several Senate seats that had been considered vulnerable, including in Iowa, Texas, Maine, and Kansas. Democrats lost House seats, but were expected to retain control there. The high-stakes election was held against the backdrop of a historic pandemic that has killed more than 232,000 Americans and wiped away millions of jobs. The candidates spent months pressing dramatically different visions for the nation's future, including on racial justice, and voters responded in huge numbers, with more than 100 million people casting votes ahead of Election Day. Trump, in an extraordinary move from the White House, issued premature claims of victory, which he continued on Twitter Wednesday, and said he would take the election to the Supreme Court to stop the counting. It was unclear exactly what legal action he could try to pursue. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell discounted the president's quick claim of victory, saying it would take a while for states to conduct their vote counts. The Kentucky Republican said Wednesday that claiming you've won the election is different from finishing the counting. Vote tabulations routinely continue beyond Election Day, and states largely set the rules for when the count has to end. In presidential elections, a key point is the date in December when presidential electors met. That's set by federal law. Dozens gathered in Detroit Wednesday afternoon in a square across from the city's Election Commission office. Many wore yellow sweatshirts and carried signs reading, "Count Every Vote." Rye Lanier, one of the organizers, said they had planned the gathering so anxious people could come together and channel that energy into hope. "This is how democracy is supposed to work," she said. Macon County reacts to uncertain outcome by Valerie Wells, Danette Beckett, and Tony Reed. Decatur. Jennifer Power stayed up into the wee hours of Wednesday watching election returns, trying to decipher whether it would be four more years of President Donald Trump or a fresh term for former Vice President Joe Biden. The answer still wasn't clear, even as the sun set. "My biggest hope in all of this is, regardless of who wins, that we stop being so concerned about being right or trying to convince others we're right, but can learn to listen to each other and understand where we're coming from," said Power, a Biden supporter. Herald and Review journalists fanned out on Wednesday to gauge how voters saw an election day that produced no clear winner for president. In many ways, it continued a trend of uncertainty for the year, one marked by a pandemic and economic fallout. Laura Zimmerman, chairwoman of the Macon County Democratic Party, was cautiously optimistic that Biden will yet win enough votes to push the outcome of the presidential race beyond doubt. She brushed off legal challenges by the Trump campaign. "I think he'll have won in so many states that it won't be a problem," said Zimmerman. Still, she said, she can't help but be a bit nervous watching the legal maneuverings she said Trump has already locked into place. "No, I don't think he's got a credible claim," she added. "But that doesn't mean he won't try, and he put those people on the Supreme Court for a reason. So yes, it is a concern." By Wednesday night, the campaign had lawsuits filed in Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Georgia. Moequa resident Fran Lauer woke up early Wednesday morning just as confused and frustrated as she was the night before. "It's been a long evening," she said. "I got up at 4:30 and went and walked in the park in the middle of the night because I'm so anxious." The election results are only part of her frustrations, she said. She supported one candidate throughout the campaign. "It matters if Joe Biden wins. That would be the best thing," she said. "But still, 65 million people could vote for Donald Trump. I wonder what I'm not seeing." Zimmerman said she hopes the situation remains calm and political unrest doesn't spill over into violence. She said she hoped cooler Republican heads will prevail and step in and stop that if Trump is seen stirring up trouble that could deteriorate into physical confrontations. Such a big divide. A self-described political junkie, Tim Spinner of Decatur, had hoped for a decisive Trump victory, but was beginning to think the tide was turning in Biden's favor in a very close race. "If I had to put money down as to whether or not Trump would win, I would probably say no at this point," Spinner said on Wednesday morning. "I think there are a number of avenues still available, but I also think that door is closing more and more as the hours go by." Spinner said he expects challenges and possibly court cases before the outcome is settled. Power said she is a novice and knows very little about politics. She said she just hopes the winner will try to unite the divided country and that people will try to set their differences aside. It seems to me like President Trump plays on the fears of others and incites hate and violence, Power said. He seems to appeal to his base, and I don't necessarily see him being interested in bringing our country together. I hope I'm wrong about that, but I feel much more hopeful for our future with Biden as president. The community's clear split between the presidential candidates has created negative reactions between family members and friends, which is frustrating and heartbreaking to Lauer. How is there such a big divide, she said. The important topics during the election year are understandable, including the economy. I care about it too, Lauer said, but COVID was at the bottom of the list and racial inequality. I feel hopeless right now. If Biden is the winner, Spinner said, he will have a Democratic House to back his agenda, though Senate Republicans could prevent some things from going through. There's plenty of things that Joe has said during the election that make me concerned for the direction the country is going in, and individuals in the Democrat Party, Bernie Sanders, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and Ilhan Omar, are beginning to gain a large share of power in the Democrat Party, which is pushing them very far to left, Spinner said. I don't think that's good for our country or any country. The tax factor. Then there was the ballot question about the graduated income tax. The proposal, a marquee item for the Pritzker administration, would have amended the Illinois Constitution, which requires that income be taxed at a flat rate. It's currently at 4.95% for individual payers. Pritzker campaigned on switching to a graduated rate, contending he could raise $3 billion extra a year while not imposing higher taxes on 97% of taxpayers. But it failed to get enough votes. Power was in favor of it with some reservations. In theory, I support those who have the most paying more, Power said. I do understand there are implications for the state as far as pushing those people to move out of state and what that does to the rest of us. I do think that those who have more can give a larger percentage because those at the bottom are struggling to make ends meet as it is. So I voted on that one somewhat hesitantly. State Representative Dan Calkins, Republican of Decatur, said the tax referendum was defeated because people are sick of politicians wasting their tax dollars. He said they have seen promises before about how state finances would be helped by cannabis sales or schools boosted by income from the state lottery. None of that ever happened, he said, claiming the money gets siphoned off for other purposes and is not used to boost education or pay down the state's vast backlog of bills. Lauer voted against the tax amendment. We have to balance our budget in our homes, she said. I believe the state should too. Spinner was against the amendment with no reservations. That was one bright spot in the evening on Tuesday, Spinner said. It appears as though Illinois citizens, regardless of which party they tend to vote for, are still very leery about giving Springfield more money, regardless of who they claim will pay those additional taxes. Our state budget and pension funds are a complete mess at this time, and while taxes may have to increase across the board in the near future, contractual obligations for pension levels will have to be renegotiated to lower levels, or we will go bankrupt. It's always a shell game, and people remember that. They're not stupid. Our voters are not gullible. They understand they pay attention, Calkins said, and they watch their own pocketbook while they see the state of Illinois squandering their tax money. As for the influx state of the race for the presidency, Calkins said Trump and Republicans are right to be fearful of the way elections are held in some states. He said there were many incredible reports of unfair practices and voter harassment. There are three co-equal branches of government, and the judicial branch is in place to resolve disputes, legal disputes, Calkins added. And so if the president and his team feel that there has been corruption and shenanigans or whatever to deliberately toss the election to the other side, they have every right to pursue that legal avenue. Clerk, 2020 may change elections in the future, by Garrett Karsten, Decatur. Josh Tanner reflected on Tuesday, considering the circumstances that had to be worked around for the election day 2020. I thought it went pretty well, considering we had a lot of new election judges and there are always issues, Tanner said. Tanner, the Macon County clerk, said a main issue regarded mail-in ballots, as voters had consistently been coming into the county building who had previously requested to vote by mail. They were either required to, if they received it, surrender the ballot at the polling place, or they would have to vote provisionally, he said. And a lot of voters didn't bring their ballots with them to surrender. The 2020 election saw more of this problem because voting by mail, and early voting in general, was much higher than previous election years. The 49,354 Macon County residents who voted in Tuesday's election were among 72,049 who were registered to vote, according to the results. These figures showed that 21,400 of the election's voters, 43.4% of the total, cast votes on Tuesday. 17,575 cast early votes, 35.6%, and 10,379 votes by mail, 21%. On Wednesday, 1,687 outstanding mail-in ballots were still anticipated to arrive in Macon County, Tanner said. Election Day was the final day mail-in ballots could be postmarked, and November 17th is the last day they can be received, he said. Tanner said that the trend of early voting will likely carry on to future elections, estimating that many Macon County residents decided to vote early in the 2020 election, who have otherwise always voted on Election Day, and may very well continue to do so. I think people like that option, he said. It just gives them variability to come and vote when they're not working, or not rushed, or the weather is nice, or whatever is convenient for them. The county clerk said he's already preparing for the next municipal election, and already knows a bit of what to expect, given COVID-19 restrictions will still be in place. One accommodation during early voting and Tuesday's election was providing enough space as voters waited in line, allowing for social distancing of 6 feet. Luckily, a lot of people did early vote, so that reduced the number of people on Election Day, Tanner said. The polling places are going to stay the same, but the turnout is obviously significantly lower in a municipal election. If we have the same number of early voters and vote by mail, there will be very little to vote on Election Day if the turnout is the same. COVID, local, state, school employees asked to work at home, by Valerie Wells, Decatur. Decatur Public Schools administrators are asking all employees who are able to work from home. In a statement released Tuesday afternoon and signed by School Board President Beth Nolan and Superintendent Paul Frugeau, the district asked employees to work with building principals, their direct supervisors, and union representatives to determine which duties can be completed from home and to limit the number of people in district buildings while COVID-19 numbers continue to rise. The district, which began the school year offering remote-only learning, announced October 30th that classes would remain that way until at least the start of the third quarter. By agreement, teachers were required to work from district buildings on Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday, while working remotely on Wednesdays. The order is in effect through December 4th, with another announcement planned for November 30th that will cover the remainder of the month of December. The buildings will remain open, and appointments will still be available for students who need one-on-one tutoring or other support from teachers and staff. Employees are still expected to complete all their job duties wherever they're working. Macon County is on heightened warning status because it exceeds four of the state's metrics used to measure coronavirus. Among those metrics is a positivity rate of 12.4% when the target rate is 8% or less. The entire state is under renewed state restrictions intended to reduce the spread of coronavirus. Those restrictions include no outdoor dining or bar service and limits on the size of gatherings. A region, of which Macon County is part of Region 6, is placed under the renewed restrictions after it exceeds an 8% positivity rate for 3 straight days. It will remain under the renewed restrictions until it maintains a positivity rate of 6.5% or less for 3 straight days. Shelby County on Wednesday reported 2 COVID-19 deaths, bringing its total to 20, and Moultrie County reported its 7th coronavirus-related death. Governor J.B. Pritzker urged residents on Wednesday to stay focused on slowing the spread of COVID-19 as the state's one-day COVID-19 case positivity rate hit 10.5%, its highest rate since May 22nd. And the Illinois Department of Public Health reported its second highest one-day total of new confirmed cases with 7,538. I know there's a lot of focus on other current events right now, but I do want to remind everyone that Illinois and the nation, especially the states making news right now for their role in the presidential election, are in the middle of a public health crisis. And we cannot forget to take the necessary precautions to beat this pandemic down, Pritzker said during his daily press briefing on Wednesday. Hospitalizations for COVID-19 once again pushed past second wave highs, as the rolling 7-day average test positivity rate in all 11 of the state's mitigation regions exceeded 10%. The state also reported another 55 COVID-19 related deaths, bringing the state's death total since the pandemic began to 9,933 among 437,556 confirmed cases out of 8 million test results reported. I know there's a lot of focus on other current events right now, but I do want to remind everyone that Illinois and the nation, especially the states making news right now for their role in the presidential election, are in the middle of a public health crisis, and we cannot forget to take the necessary precautions to beat this pandemic down, Governor J.B. Pritzker. Decatur Schools, Board Discusses Tax Levy, Resolution on Race, by Valerie Wells, Decatur. Decatur Public Schools expects to require an annual tax levy of $31.6 million. During Wednesday's school board meeting, moved to Wednesday because of the election on Tuesday, Chief Operational Officer Todd Kowalt gave a presentation on the proposed tax levy. The board will vote on the levy in December. The proposed increase is just less than 2 cents over the 2019 rate and would be an increase of $6.63 per $100,000 of equalized assessed value. The board also heard an update from the committees who have been working on the resolution on racism that the board approved on August 4th. Ron Liebarger, an English teacher at Eisenhower High School, spoke on behalf of the curriculum committee, which is working on ways to choose materials that are more inclusive. There are certain pieces that you are supposed to look for as it pertains to multicultural awareness and inclusivity, he said. In adopting new curriculum, this would be where every time we recommend materials as a group, before we adopt or as we're adopting, we immediately have a review to make sure that it actually meets the minimum criteria of the district policy so we can maybe, perhaps, single some out that we won't want to use because of a lack of adherence to board policy. Other committees are looking at social and emotional learning and restorative justice practices, for example. Teacher Leslie Johnson is on the Social Emotional Learning Committee and spoke of ways to ensure that the curriculum in that area helps teachers and students be aware of their own implicit biases, she said. Students in Decatur Public Schools will remain in virtual learning for the remainder of the fall, and the board reminded families that they must log on to Skyward Family Access to select an option for the time when in-person learning is possible. If families choose in-person learning as their option, the schools will be able to prepare for students to be assigned to in-person days, with virtual learning planned for the other days of the week. Families who have already logged into their choice do not have to do so again unless they've changed their preference. If no choice is made, the student will automatically be assigned to all virtual learning. The soonest students could expect to return to in-person learning is January 4th, the beginning of the third quarter, though the district will make that decision depending on the community's health situation. The next announcement will be December 4th. The plan, as it is, now calls for students to be divided into two groups, with one group attending in person on Tuesdays and the other group on Thursday, while all other days will be virtual learning. Police, mom run over, killed in drug dispute, by Tony Reed, Decatur. Police reports say that a Decatur woman was run over and killed after getting into a dispute with a mechanic during a drug deal. But their meeting broke down into an altercation, according to a sworn affidavit from Decatur police, and 27-year-old Alicia A. Gordon struggled to get out of the car, driven by Christopher R. Castelli, 32. The affidavit said video surveillance from the late Friday night death scene at the intersection of Dolphin Court and Kent Avenue shows Castelli's car accelerating forward and jolting to a halt as Gordon tried to exit. The video shows this happening a second time, but on this occasion, Gordon does get clear. Police officer Austin Lewis said Gordon is seen standing in the road with the passenger door wide open as the car is thrown into reverse, accelerating toward her. The open passenger side door strikes the front seat passenger, who was later identified as Alicia Gordon, knocking her to the ground and under the vehicle, said Lewis, a member of the police department's special fatal accident investigation team. Alicia is subsequently run over on both her chest and face and head by the passenger side tires of the vehicle. Lewis said Castelli then rapidly drove around the woman and was seen accelerating away at a high rate of speed, leaving the victim, the mother of a week-old child, dead at the scene from her terrible crushing injuries. Lewis said Castelli was tracked down using the video information and by officers sifting through the records on Gordon's phone, recovered from the roadway next to her broken body. He said it contained Facebook Messenger texts between the mother and a man identified as Chris Green. That Facebook account for Green's Messenger profile was later deleted by Castelli, but not before police had found his picture on their way to identifying Chris Green as really being him. The silver Toyota sedan Castelli had texted Gordon he would be driving matched the vehicle seen in the surveillance video. Lewis said in the affidavit that Christopher said he knew Gordon through Facebook and admitted to getting into an altercation with Alicia and ultimately striking her with the door of his vehicle as he backed up. Police allege that Castelli, arrested Tuesday afternoon and formerly employed as a mechanic at a Decatur automobile dealership, had driven his car into work on Monday, where he changed the passenger side tire, washed off the passenger side of his vehicle before leaving work early, according to Lewis. Police later examined the car and found dried stains that tested positive for blood in the passenger side wheel well. Castelli was booked on preliminary charges of reckless homicide, failure to render aid at the scene of an accident, and failure to report an accident resulting in death or injury. All preliminary charges are subject to review by the state's attorney's office. A check of Macon County jail records Wednesday showed that Castelli is being held in custody with bond set at $250,000, meaning he must post $25,000 to be released. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Herald and Review for Thursday, November 5th, 2020. Please stay tuned.